One of the most powerful pathways to belonging is service. When I think about the work we did with Downtown Streets team in Santa Cruz and other places, I witnessed such an incredible community formed with folks given an opportunity to serve. Part of it was work. Part of it was we're gonna do work and get paid. But what really showed the value was when people were appreciated for serving and seeing making a difference. I really think service is such a great pathway to belonging. When I think about the places I belong, it's because I invested in those places and I served. So I think service is, and it's hope too. At the end of the day, belonging, it's an act of optimism. We create places where people can connect and contribute and be seen. And what that is we're betting on each other. That's what placemaking is. That's what co-working is trying to do. And that's what communities need. We need to bet on each other.
Welcome to Coworking Out Loud, conversations about belonging. I'm your host, Kat Johnson. Every day, people find belonging in different ways, through coworking, neighborhoods, friendships, shared purpose, and countless other pathways. This show explores those pathways. In each episode, I sit down with coworking space operators, community builders, authors, researchers, creators, and other thoughtful humans to better understand one question: how do we create places where people feel like they belong? I'm glad you're here. Let's dive in. Today, I'm here with my longtime friend, Chip, from Big Creative Consulting. Chip ran the Downtown Association in Santa Cruz, California, while I was there. He was CEO of Downtown Boulder Partnership in Boulder, Colorado. He's a friend from my first home co-working space, the original Next Space Santa Cruz. He's host of the Sidewalk Ballet podcast, and he's my go-to person when I want to talk about placemaking. Chip, welcome to Coworking Out Loud. Did I miss anything? What else should we tell him about you?
I think you covered quite a bit, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And I want to jump us into the deep end with a question that I think about a lot. What is belonging? What are we even talking about here? And it's such a hard one to wrap around. And I found a definition that says it's a psychological sense of fitting in, being accepted, or feeling emotionally connected to a community or place. And I like some aspects of that. But Brené Brown would say that fitting in is the opposite of belonging. Like, there's a whole big thing here. So let's just jump into the deep end. How do you think about belonging?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's something we circle around a lot in city building and placemaking in the conversations I have with folks. And I think it is that feeling that you're welcomed, valued, but really, I think more so for me, it's the feeling that you're able to contribute to the community without having to become somebody else. It's interesting because we think about belonging as something that, you belong, or how belonging is very much a reciprocal conversation. There's partly what you bring to a community, an environment, a place, but also how that environment and place relates with you. So it is very relational, but I think it is about contribution and feeling like you have. We talk about so many words get kind of lost in their meaning. We talk about value, but, I feel valued. What does that really mean when you're talking about belonging? It's like, I'm able to provide value, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me feel like I belong somewhere. And I think that's a big root of the work that I do in placemaking and with placemaking is creating conditions and opportunities that people can provide value. Because that's better for the whole, it's better for the individual, it's better for the project, it's better for the community. Like, the more value people are able to bring to their communities, the stronger the communities are.
And I've always said in a co-working space, the best way to give a member a sense of belonging and ownership is to ask them to do something, like bring in your famous cookies, teach a lunch and learn, lead a workshop, like whatever. But like, once someone is in a position, not only does it help you connect with other people, but like in that position where they're pouring into the space or community or whatever, it completely transforms that dynamic. I love what you said about being able to contribute without changing who you are, or like just as yourself. I feel like that's key. And it goes back to like the difference between fitting in, where you kind of morph yourself to be like the group, or being able to walk in as you are, whether it's a library, a park, a space, whatever, and just be part of things.
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting, the idea of fitting in, and what does that really mean? I wish I could remember who to credit this to. I was talking to somebody, and I think it was a friend who has a younger teenager who was talking about the idea of fitting in and this and that. And the young person said, I don't want to fit in, I want to fit out. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, which I think there's a lot in that, and like being able to, it's not about like assimilating into an environment, but bringing who you are to a place and into a project or a community. But I think that is, you know, to your point of you want people to belong, have them do something. I had a great conversation with a woman, Charlotte Massey, who's a co-founder of an organization that started in Seattle called the Chamber of Connection. And it's a really cool, like taking the idea of Chamber of Commerce, but looking at like people need to be supported in making connection. And, you know, we talk a lot about isolation and loneliness and community and connection in cities and in communities. And they're doing some really interesting work of creating social infrastructure and providing social architecture to help people connect, and came up with a whole lot of scientifically based processes for understanding how to connect. And what they have found early on in this process is what most people want to do to engage in this is help other people connect, right? And so there is that sort of service that you bring to the community. It's like, I'm not going to come take advantage of all these tools. I'm going to help other people. And that's how I feel connected. That's how I feel my belonging. And I think that goes to your point, you know, for your members in a co-working space. If you think about the ones who do feel belonging and have that sense of belonging, it's because they're part of it. It's not that they're welcomed in. It's because they have a part in shaping it and influencing it and controlling it and serving it. Right. And I think service is something that's really, really connected to belonging. Right. And when you look at any kind of public project, you know, the public piece is really part of it. And those that are really successful involve the public deeply. Right. And in a sense of ownership and service and connection.
You know, I think about the learning curve too. Even if it's you're the person who knows how to remake the coffee or whatever, it's like when you first get there, you don't. When you first get into a community of any type, you're totally the new person. You're looking around, don't know anything about anything. And then there's this learning curve. And at some point, you're the person who knows how to refill the coffee. And I think with any community, it's like that essential first little batch of time and space of like making sure people feel brought in. And do you have any thoughts about that? Like that thing from going to stranger to part of?
Yeah, you know, it's work. Like connection is work and repetition and showing up. And I think that, you know, it's a two-way street, because as an individual, you don't build community by just saying, I want community, right? You don't make friends just by saying, hey, you person, nice to meet you, we're going to be friends. Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of connection. It takes hours of you know, shared experience. And I think that's the same thing for belonging. But I will say, you know, belonging doesn't come from the big events where we're going to have a big event and everybody's going to meet. And it comes from refilling the coffee every day for a long time and bringing that repetitive, the repeated interactions of like not community building campaigns, but just like familiar faces and rituals and tiny conversations and being recognized and being, you know, that's one of the things where, you know, somebody sees you after they understand you've had those conversations and Like, what do you do? Oh, cool. We all have that first conversation at the mixer or the happy hour. What do you do? I do this. And then, you know, after a few times, that's in your head and you're talking to yourself, oh, Kat does this. I should connect this person with Kat. And that's where belonging comes. But that takes a lot of repetition. You know, we talk a lot about third place and how important having those third places are where people in community can connect. And, you know, something that, you know, I think it's really important to understand. You don't have a third place because you say, okay, here's a cool pub. I'm going to go there. And this will be my third place, right? That's where it starts, but it becomes your third place because you participate in the community, you show up regularly, you start to build relationships. And then when you walk in, you're familiar, it's familiar, your community is familiar. That familiarity takes investment, whether it's making a friend, building a third place, or just feeling belonging in a co-working space. Right. It takes ongoing repetitive investment, like so anything.
So much. There are two stories I'm thinking of right now that are I'm like debating which to share. But that repetition, like, and sometimes you meet somebody and there's an instant connection and you feel a sense that you can just be who you are. You know, maybe there's however that works. And other times, like my golf buddy, we started golfing together in the women's league here like 2 or 3 years ago. And she's a little reserved. I'm a little introverted. You know, I don't just like burst on the scene. It has taken us 2.5 years to get to the place. Now we're like jokey, really familiar. For a long time, we would just golf. And it's interesting to me. It has taken so long. But the other thing, my favorite coffee shop in town, like I walk in and they're like, hey, Kat, instead of writing my name, they draw an illustration of a cat. They give me a little discount. It's like, that's totally my spot. That's one of my third places, right? I walk in, I'm super comfortable there. I don't have to be anyone other than who I am. I can hang out for hours reading and doodling. And but two totally different things,
right?
Like that.
But that didn't happen the first time you went into that coffee shop. They didn't say, hey, Kat, and draw pictures of Kat. You didn't feel like you were part of it. You might have felt welcomed, right? You might have felt that, like, it was friendly and warm and they welcome, hello. But it becoming your third place, that took repetition, that took investment on your time. And at the same time, warmth and structure on the part of the coffee house to get there. So,
you know how it happened? I started riding my bike there last year. I started riding my bike there like every other day. I'd go on this big, long, sweaty bike ride, go get a matcha. So they would see me every other day come in all crazy. They're like, where'd you ride from? Where this? Where do you live? Oh, how far is it? How's the day? Buff, 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 buff. And I'm like getting to know them. They're getting to know me. And then now we're there. And when there's a new person who doesn't know me, I'm kind of like,
Do you have any idea who I am? I'm the bike lady.
Exactly. Right. I'm one of the characters that you talk about, right? The town characters or whatever. Chip, another thing, like to shift into the placemaking thing, one of the things I love about the Commons is, like, I feel like a shared sense of ownership, not just of my local library, of any library. Mm-hmm. I know that I can walk into any library in the country and I'm welcome there. It's a place created for people like me who love libraries and books and, you know, sitting and relaxing and all the things. Same thing with parks, plazas. I love a public space, a commons, where there's this unspoken thing that it belongs to us, which is like a little twist on the word belonging, where there's a sense of ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's actually interesting because it's beyond, I think it's different, a little bit different than a sense of ownership, because the public space is, you know, some of it is owned by the public, some of it is not, some of it is used by, you know, private or quasi-public, or, you know, libraries are an interesting thing that it is, we do feel like we have ownership. I think a lot of that feeling that you have is in there is stewardship, right? And there's a collective governance, collective stewardship. And I think that's one of the things that I'm really interested in right now is that the relationship between public space and public stewardship. And, you know, I think one of the things that I'm really exploring right now in this idea of public space is kind of public as a verb, right? If that makes sense. And for a space to be public, the public has to be part of it. The public has to be active mm-hmm. in it. It's not like, I think, you know, there are a lot of really valid examples of places that are accessible and open to the public, and public comes and does what they do. And it's a very defined use with a lot of parameters and rules. And it's open to the public, right? And even like a cafe is, you know, a public space, and is like, you're, you know, that you're welcome to do it. And to some degree, a library is. And I'm really interested right now in the public spaces that are continually defined by the public use, right? And not to say there's like a free-for-all anarchy, come and do whatever you want, but when you see how truly public parks are used, they evolve, their use changes. Like when there's a new sporting activity that comes in the world and everybody starts using that, how does that impact the other uses, right? If there's, you know, different groups, and how do we co-create these spaces together that truly are public and have public stewardship, public governance, and public use. But that public can't be like stagnant. That public participation is ongoing, and that's what makes it interesting and makes it valuable.
So give me an example. You said you're really interested in this right now. Like, what is a top of mind thing? And don't say the pickle word.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of the work that we do are in urban centers, right? And shared space in urban centers, there's wherever you are, however dense your urban center is, there's, you know, a thought that it's already like full and that we don't have enough right. space for everybody, which is yeah. false. We do. There's lots of space, you know, for lots of uses, but there's tensions between uses in public space. I think streets are a really interesting example of that. Like, how do we, who streets are public, right? They're owned by the government, but they're public access and use. And we use streets for a lot of different mm-hmm. purposes. Sometimes just as roads, sometimes as parks, sometimes as markets. A lot of many streets, you know, do all of those together. And those uses, like who decides what those uses are, and how do they, how are they decided, and what's the impact for the public and for the stewardship? And I think a lot of it, you can look at a governance structure to say who decides what the uses of a street are through, you know, policy work, legislative work, you know, et cetera. And ultimately who decides is who's using them. So if you say we're going to have a market on a street, and it's, you know, interestingly, after the pandemic, we had a lot of experimentation with slow streets and closed streets and this streets. And, you know, a lot of those decisions were made in city council chambers and other places initially. But then the ultimate decision was how the spaces are used. So if you do some experimenting and the public starts using it in a certain way, the public is making the decisions of how it's going to be used ultimately in best case scenario. But I think having those ideas of like, where are places being used? What are the needs for places? And that only works if the public shows up, right? If the public engages in a space, and that goes to stewardship of, you know, how do we create places where public does want to show up without defining how they show up, and that kind of relationship between stewardship. And when we talk about that in the context of co-working space, like we talked about this a little bit, you can design like with the best designer in the world a really cool space that you think people are going to use in a certain way, and they may, and then once you open the doors and start observing like where people are congregating, how people are moving through the space, where people feel comfortable, you know, that kind of designs your space ultimately, you know, and design, and it's a continual process of, you know, as different people, as different uses happen, you know, you can, you know, put in a foosball table in a corner and that could be like where everybody congregates, or it could be nobody really cares about yeah. that. And then it's not just taking up space. And, you know, that's just a very random specific example, but there's this idea of you steward the space by trying things like putting a foosball table in the corner to see if that builds community and connection, or maybe it just creates disruption and, you know, it doesn't work. And then you pay attention and you continue to design it. But you're, I think the biggest design information or the biggest data for your design is, you know, your users, your public. Right. And it's an ongoing thing. And that's what I really love about placemaking is like, you're not designing places and then it's okay, here it is, here you go, use it, we did it. Like, it's a continual process and evolution of how does a place evolve and how does a place support the people who use it and who uses it and how does that change and how do you continue to have those conversations day after day after day in a place, whether that place is a co-working space or a plaza or a street or a retail store or a city.
Yeah, Chip, that's a perfect segue into the placemaking principles that, you know, start with the petunias, lighter, quicker, cheaper stuff. I'm going to rattle off the 11 principles so people who haven't heard them before have a sense of what we're talking about before we dive in a little deeper. Number one, the community is the expert. Number two, create a place, not a design. Three, you can't do it alone. Four, you can see a lot just by observing. Five, have a vision. Six, start with the petunias. Seven, triangulate. Eight, they always say it can't be done. Nine, form supports function. 10, money is not the issue. And 11, you're never finished, which you just talked about several of them in there. We don't need to go through each one, but there are some of these, maybe all of them, that I feel like relate so well to just community building at large. Like, the community is the expert. Let's start at the beginning, you know, whether how to use the space, programming, what we want, what we need. I think that gets overlooked a lot when someone like builds a plaza that nobody wants to sit in or something. Do you have favorites among these principles or anything you want to dig into with, especially as it relates to creating places of belonging?
Yeah, that's a great. So I'll just say for a little context, those principles were developed by Project for Public Spaces, which is a remarkable organization and resource that does a lot of work and kind of has defined it to find a lot of the work of placemaking, and, you know, started 50 years ago, kind of on the studies that William White was doing around the plazas in New York and how people use plazas and a lot of study there and some really great work that's been going on for 50 years and continues to evolve. But those principles are sort of the foundation and core mm-hmm. to a lot of the placemaking work that exists in the world. And, you know, I think it's interesting, those principles have held really true for a long time. And I think there's nuance within a lot of it. Really, for me, it's like what has always gotten me excited about the work that I do in community building is that number one principle. It's, you know, the community is the expert. And, you know, if you're able to maintain keeping the community like centered in the work of building place and stewarding space and managing space, then you're going to have successful places. That's a really kind of simplified version of, because what does that mean? Who is the community? How do you center them? Where are the resources coming from? And, you know, and it's hard. We talk about this a lot with, you know, there's a number of different kind of approaches to placemaking and what placemaking is and what different kinds of placemaking. And, you know, I just had an amazing conversation with a brilliant practitioner and scholar, Dr. Kara Courage, who's kind of a global expert on the study of placemaking and doing a lot of really interesting work right now with trauma-informed placemaking. Mm. And you know, one of the things we talked about is how a lot of placemaking projects and a lot of like built environment city projects, they're on a timeline, they're on a budget. Like community engagement is time consuming. Like yeah. being inclusive in building cities takes time, mm-hmm. and time is a resource. And so there's always a tension of like, how do you do the due diligence of really involving your community? Cause you're going to have better outcomes. I think that the field is changing a lot right now, mm. in the placemaking world, that a lot of people who do control projects, fund projects, really understand the value of engaging community. But I think that's the number one thing for me when you look at the principles. And there's a lot, you know, I mean, you've known me a long time, that start with the Petunias idea is you know, I ran downtown Santa Cruz for a decade with like an embarrassingly low budget, like embarrassingly, and we did so much great stuff. And what we did, and part of the value of like having a low budget and a scrappy staff, was I couldn't get bogged down in like, okay, we have a $3 million project, let's study it, let's do this. We're like, we got 50 bucks, let's go do something. Let's put
some tables like, out, just, right?
Like... Yeah, let's just try it and see what works. And then iterate. And, you know, I think so for me personally, I, you know, that's something that when I can work from that place of like, I don't know, like, let's see how this goes. And then, but again, when you center the community and that, you know, I think of some of the folks in Next Space where you and I worked together, you know, we did an event in downtown Santa Cruz around the holidays that was a text-based scavenger hunt pub crawl for the holidays, and we called it Downtown Santa Cruz. And it was a blast. And this was like, you know, it came from, we do a lot of kids events around the holidays, right? Which is great. We were doing Snow Night, we were doing the parade, we were doing a reindeer roundup, which was a little hiding reindeers in stores with a little sky. And so we were like, let's do an adult thing, right? Adults, we wanted to get adults downtown, and there's a nightlife here. So we created this pub crawl scavenger hunt. And it was so scrappy. We did it with like zero budget. And, you know, Eric Gilbert was one of the co-working members there, and he put together this technology for me, this software. He built this whole back end, and you know, Chris and all these people at Next Space who were able to. So I think kind of that combination of like, I'm building an event like for the community, and then in doing that, in working with Eric, who helped build the technology, Eric's like, this is really cool. And he brought a bunch of friends to the event because mm-hmm. he was part of the event, right?
Yep.
And other people. And there's a million examples of like, when you bring people in to help you co-create and build something, then they're part of it. They have ownership over it, and they feel like it's a sense. And that's what belonging is, right?
Yeah, that 100%. That's a good full circle. That is what belonging is.
And that was such a fun event. That was so much fun.
You know, the original Next Space Santa Cruz set an impossibly high bar for me of what co-working can be. I feel like everything is aspirational after that. But all kinds of events. Remember recess? Mm-hmm. Recess day where we'd go for an hour to the park. Yeah, we'd go juggle in Abbott Square. We'd go walk around. So many after events, so many different things. It was in every way a community.
I never could get the tetherball poles. I was trying to get tetherball in Abbott Square for recess, because that was my favorite thing to do as a kid at recess, is go out and play tetherball.
Somebody will get knocked out. Maybe right. their reliability issues.
I think that the museum down there wasn't quite on board with the liability for that.
Right.
Maybe we did have it once. I don't remember. It was but that was, and we've talked about this a little bit and kind of tried to start interrogating what was it about that moment that created that community. Cause I think it was a cool space. But I think the space was like low on the list of what
the space
made it
was
work.
Definitely secondary. Yeah. Or, you know,
and, but it was, you know, there was really good people. I think it was a really good time. There was a lot of creativity. It was this moment of a lot of startups in Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz has always been a very innovative and participatory and creative place.
Yep.
And capturing that in this center of friction and creative friction in there, and just where people came together, you know. But it's I've not experienced that in a co-working environment to that degree, you know. And I work in a great co-working space currently in San Francisco and in Trellis, but I had there's something about that next space moment that it's hard to define.
Agreed. You know, I think about it a lot, and one of the things is the town, the city's was already community focused, right? So opening a co-working space in a town that already has a good sense of community and cohesiveness is way easier than opening it in some place where you're trying to educate and drag and get people to participate. Co-working in Utah, just like the overall cultural theme in Utah, could not be more different than Santa Cruz, right? And it's interesting what that looks like. But the underlying thing, I just taught a training yesterday on this. The underlying thing is, like, it's still people who need belonging and connection and a sense of ownership. So it's like, what does that look like regardless of where, what kind of culture you're in? Because as we dig down, we're just these humans who need each other. You know, it's so simple. All of this stuff is so simple, but not necessarily easy, right? People ask me a lot, what's the return on community? What's the ROI on community? And it's like, first of all, if you're asking, it's probably not going to be your thing, right? But number two, it's like, I don't know how to answer that. What's the return on having a highly activated, engaged space? What is that worth? You could maybe put some numbers on it, try some things, you squeeze some metrics out of it. But it's so much, it's like back to that original question, like, what is belonging? I don't know how to wrap my arms around that when someone asks.
I think for a long time, we've measured the wrong things. And or not necessarily the wrong things, but not all of the things we should be measuring. Mm. And there's a lot of conversations right now in the, you know, city building and district management, placemaking world about, like, what are we measuring and what is the impact of that? And I think there's a couple of things I'll say, you know, I'll just give a nod to Molly Alexander, who's a fantastic retail consultant and place consultant. She ran downtown Austin for a long, long time and is a friend. And she was on the show and talking about this idea of return on emotion.
Mm.
And how we experience the world, I think 95% emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like, we're very emotional people. And when we look at, you know, historically business districts or cities, and we're measuring pedestrian counts, we're measuring sales tax revenue, we're measuring occupancy rate, hotel stays, we're measuring a lot of quantifiable things, but that's not what brings us to a place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What brings us to a place is the emotional connection that we find in a place. And, you know, Molly spent a lot of time kind of studying this with some social scientists and really understanding the emotions that are important. And she isolated, or not isolated, but I guess kind of prioritized joy, a sense of belonging, and trust. And trust is really important in that. And I want to get to that. But I think when you look at looking at the return on connection, the return on community, like, it's an emotional return, right? But where that translates, it's harder to quantify. Like, if you think about the places you want to go, there are places that bring you joy. There are places that, like, you have a sense of belonging. And there's a sense of trust that you have there. And Molly speaks to this really well, but like, you know, you just wrote a post about New York. Think about what's happening in New York, right? I mean, joy right now in New York is like off the charts.
Yeah.
Right. And that sense of belonging, look, the Spurs are my second favorite team in the league. I've always loved the Spurs love
behind
Greg Popovich.
Golden State, I'm assuming.
Of course. Yeah. Besides Santa Cruz. And Greg Popovich is an extraordinary person.
Agreed.
I believe the reason the NBA is an international league that it is today. Wow. He hired the first woman assistant coach in the league. And I love the Spurs. And having said that, go Knicks, right?
Knicks fans. I'm like, I love Wemby. He seems such a thoughtful, cool young man. And by the end, I'm like, yes,
right.
Like making plans to move to New York.
Right. And so we're all New York fans right now because of that joy.
Yeah.
We all feel a sense of belonging in New York. Even if you've never been to New York, you're like, let's go Knicks, right?
I know.
And then, so there's something about like the economic impact of that.
That's such an awesome.
The city of New York is insane. Like, it's just going to be such an impact, and it already is and will continue. But that comes from, like, where is that coming from? It's coming from an emotional response to the place, right? And that's kind of the extreme example of it. But if you think about the places where you want to be there because of the emotional experience you have. So I think that the return on community, the return on emotion is something that is we're just starting to think about how to quantify that and how to measure that. And also it's, you know, at the end of the day, I think we're kind of in this world where we need to be thinking about, like, not everything has to be about the profitability. Like, we have to be thinking about community and how we're isolating ourselves. And a lot of the isolation comes from this drive for, you know, profitability and drive for commerce and drive for capital. And we need that. We need the private sector to succeed. And the way it does it is creating places that people want to be, and people want to be there because they're emotionally connected to it. I want to get to the trust thing, because I think this is really important in belonging. Right. And I think it's all very connected. But I think one of the things that, you know, when we were talking about the placemaking in co-working spaces, placemaking principles, and also we talked a bit about, you know, I talked about third place and second place and this and that. I think there's something that's important about belonging requires both warmth and connection and like that idea when you walk in the door, you're greeted, you have family, but it also really requires structure, right? And I think that, like, there's something invisible, places that you think about that do have a good strong sense of belonging, usually there's somebody behind the scenes, like, really making sure the structure is in place, making sure that there's good systems. If there's conflict, that's going to be resolved, and there's a path, and I know what to expect, and I know, you know, the informality that we see in places that make us feel good. That's all, you know, that does take invisible structure in a lot of places, and I think that's where trust comes from, and I think that's the job of the community builder, you know, in a co-working space. You want to be able to engage your community, and you want to be able to create environments that people are going to be able to connect and belong and feel that sense. And underneath all of that, there has to be a structure that people understand, that's predictable, and that people trust. Because if you don't have that trust, it's really probably impossible, if not really difficult, to create a sense of belonging.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. And I've heard you talk about this before on the podcast and in other contexts, that third places, there needs to be someone. It's fine that they are commercial because someone needs to be steering the ship. Someone needs to be dealing with the member who's not a good fit and causing problems. Somebody needs to make sure everything's running to hold space for everybody else. And I absolutely love that illustration of the power, like what's that worth, what's happening in New York right now. And on right. a smaller scale, it's like, what's the difference between walking into a, whether it's a co-working space, a club, whatever it may be, some kind of shared space, and having it be kind of quiet and empty, or walking in and feeling that like vibe and buzz that you want to be part of. I love that. Yep. Chip, let's see, let's do a quick speed round and I'll let you go. So three quick questions for you.
Okay.
What's one thing any community builder can do this week to facilitate more belonging?
Listen.
Love it. What's one place you truly feel like you belong?
Oh, I love that question. I'm just such a city boy. I love being places that are, I kind of consider myself a flaneur in a lot of ways. I love walking around and observing. That's a really good question. A place that I belong. You know, I like a good, like, I like somewhere that's a comfortable place that there's some sort of food or beverage, whether it's a cafe or a pub or something, that there's a combination of like informal socialization, like just people watching, or an opportunity to engage with people. So it's fun. You know, I'm living in San Francisco and we're staying in Santa Cruz for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I walk around Santa Cruz and still I've been gone for 6 or 7 years now. And we come back periodically. And every time I walk around, I just see so many people. So part of me feels like I belong, like, I don't know. I just, there's so many places.
I'm glad that you were. When I asked myself that question, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I don't know, like Atticus, the coffee shop I was telling you about, I'm totally comfortable hanging out there. Sitting in a park for a while. Like, yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. Like, where do we experience belonging? Okay, third question.
You also talked about, I'll say, you mentioned libraries. I'm a big library fan. I love libraries. I'm so excited for San Francisco has such a great library with a lot of stuff going on there.
Yep.
I'm going to be in Boulder next week. Boulder's got one of my favorite libraries. Santa Cruz is getting a new library. So a lot of my communities have really cool libraries. I love being in libraries. I love, you know, but I don't know, belonging is such a, where do I belong in so many places. I did an exercise with one of my boards once where, like, we, for a retreat, we did an icebreaker and I had people, without saying where it was, describe how they felt in their place that place that they felt like they belonged. And it was, and then everybody else had to guess where it was. And mine actually was, when we talked about it, it was the Kaiser Arena in Santa Cruz, watching the G League basketball games. If you can't tell, I'm a big basketball fan these days.
Same.
Knicks in five.
I just absolutely love that. And the thing that's interesting, I think sometimes communities give in a sense of like if you're in a small town, like this is the community, or here in Utah, they talk a lot about the community. And the way I see it, like I'm a member of a dozen different communities here, right? Some of them overlap, but it's like having that sense, different context, different aspects of me, where there's a sense, and I'm always looking for it. I'm always trying to build it. I'm always trying to find a pathway to belonging in something, which is the last question for you. What's one pathway to belonging that people often overlook?
It's supposed to be a speed round, so I'm not supposed to think about this. A pathway to belonging that often overlook. You know, I think it's, you know, I don't know that people often overlook this, but just again, and kind of we touched on this earlier, I think one of the most powerful pathways to belonging is service, right? And, you know, when I think about like, you know, the work we did with Downtown Streets Team in Santa Cruz and other places, which was a tremendous organization that worked with unhoused and previously unhoused community members to do job training And the, you know, the whole focus of it was kind of dignity through work and like engaging people. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed, you know, that's just one example of, I witnessed such an incredible community formed with folks given an opportunity to serve, right? And part of it was work, right? Part of it was like, we're going to do work and get paid and this and that to do it. But what really showed the value was when people were appreciated for serving and seeing, making a difference. And I think that belonging, I really think service is such a great pathway to belonging. And, you know, when I think about the places I belong, it's because I invested in those places and I served, you know, and I invested in the people in those places, whether it's, you know, the work I've done in downtowns or theaters or, you know, in various other places. So I think service is, you know, and it's hope too. I mean, I think there's that, you know, that's what I think at the end of the day, belonging is it's an act of optimism, right? And we create places where people can connect and contribute and be seen. And what that is we're betting on each other, right? Like, and that's what placemaking is. That's what co-working is trying to do. And that's what communities need. Like, we need to bet on each other. And that's what belonging is providing an opportunity to bet on each other, right?
That is a perfect jumping off point. Chip, thank you so much. What's the best place, way for people to connect with you?
Chip at bigcreativeconsulting.com. Big Creative Consulting is my consultant base, but also I'll plug the podcast, Sidewalk Ballet. You can find it everywhere. I'm pretty easy to track down. But yeah, Sidewalk Ballet, we've had some amazing conversations with like global thought leaders in place and cities, and it's just getting started. We have some really fun things lined up and really, you know, brilliant people. So I'm having fun with that.
I absolutely love the show. It always gives me so much to think about. Chip, thank you so much for taking the time. It's always awesome to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you. This was a treat. This was really fun. It's always good to see you, and we'll see you downtown.
I'll see you downtown. Love it. Bye, Chip.
Thanks for listening to Coworking Out Loud. If you'd like to keep exploring belonging, community, and connection with me, head over to katjohnson.co. You'll find my weekly essays, upcoming events, and more conversations about creating places where people feel like they belong. Thanks for being here. I'll see you next time.